me okay? I think so. Excellent. So first of all, thank you, Mark, for the opportunity to come and speak today in this session about some of the research that we do at the University of Florida on thermal tolerance. And it is working. So I'm going to start with a few numbers, which I'm not sure, I don't think will surprise anybody in this room, but, you know, if we look at the beef cattle in the world, we do have more than 50% in tropical and subtropical regions, so which means hot and humid conditions, okay? So you have a global distribution of cattle map. Here you can see where they are. But also, if you just look at U.S., we do have about 40% of the beef cows in this type of environment. So not a small percentage of our beef cattle in hot and humid regions. And if we look, of course, we know both syndicates influence cattle, play an important role actually around the world. Probably about 80% of the global beef production is both syndicates based. This is not surprising because, as we know, there are a number of advantages that the both syndicates has, and the critical role that it plays. Let's see.
Can you move your mic up to closer? Let's see if that helps.
Better?
Yep. There you go.
Okay. Gonna go back a little bit if we can. Let's see there. All right, so both syndicates, germplasm, critical role in not only worldwide but also in the U.S., and that's more when we use it as part of a well-structured crossbreeding program. Why is that important? Well, they first of all, the adaptation to heat and humidity that these animals are gonna have. They're also resistant or at least tolerant to internal and external parasites. And of course, what we've been seeing over and over when we do use the both syndicates in the crossbreeding program is that they do produce cattle which they reproduce, they gain well, and they also live long. So very important that contribution of the both syndicates into a crossbreeding program. So I'm going to go back to the thermal tolerance, and if we look in those regions, especially the tropical and subtropical regions, the climate stress, the heat stress, is the major limiting factor of production efficiency that we see in our beef cattle populations. And so that's why I think that if we look at the genomic tools, that's going to allow us to do two things. First of all, will allow us to select for animals that are not only superior in their thermal tolerance, but also superior in terms of their productivity. And I'm going to focus on this during my talk, and how do we find or how do we select in the same time for thermal tolerance while increasing the productivity. But also I think the genomic tools, if we can develop them for this purpose, they are going to offer us a sustainable approach, which is also energy efficient, to meet this challenge of that we have in front of us in terms of feeding that many people with the products that we have, and also in a world which is getting hotter and hotter every year. So I wanted to take a look at what happens or how the cattle respond when they are under heat stress. And there are really two main mechanisms that they are going to try to bring into action. So they're going to try to regulate on one hand the heat production. This is important. So they are going to try to limit how much heat they are going to produce. All right. So this is done by modulating the basal metabolic rate, but you all know what happens, right? It's really hot outside. The animals are going to start eating, but that's going to impact production. And so, yes, it is an important pathway in terms of minimizing the heat which is produced by the animal, but this is a pathway that we really do not like our animal to take, because this is going to decrease the productivity that we're trying to bring up. And so the second mechanism that we have, or the cattle have it at their disposal, it is the increase of the heat exchange. That happens mostly by increasing the blood flow to the skin. So the blood is the one that's going to take that internal energy, that internal heat which is produced. It's going to bring it up to the surface, and that's where it's going to be lost through evaporation. Mostly sweating and a little bit of panting, but most of the evaporation that happens in beef cattle, about 85%, is actually happening through sweating. So what we do in our research, we are trying to focus on these two mechanisms and say, what I would like to be able to do is find a way to select for cattle which are able to regulate or increase this heat exchange and leave this heat production alone, because this is really related to that productivity level that we still want to drive up even more. And so from this point of view, that's the goal of our research, trying to develop genomic tools that are going to allow us to select in the same time for animals which are thermotolerant, but also productive. So still selecting for increased productivity, but in the same time making sure that we are paying attention to the thermotolerance of those animals. So I'm going to show you some data. First of all, I'm going to start with, we have two research populations that we use. The first one is coming from the University of Florida. This is a multi-breed population. It varies from 100, it goes from 100% Brahman to 100% Angus. We really group them in six different groups based on their breed composition. So breed group one is 100% Angus all the way to breed six, which is the purebred Brahman. And then I do have a separate breed group for Brangus, the 3858s, which is the Brangus. So over the last two summers, we used about 335 cows. These are actually all heifers from this population. And what we do, and this is what we do in all of our research populations, we measure internal body temperature. We actually measure vaginal temperature, which is a great indicator of internal body temperature. We measure it with an iButton temperature logger that we insert into a bland sitter. And then we put them in, we record the temperature over, over 5 days. We actually throw out the first day when we insert the sitter, we throw out the last day when we bring the heifers back in to take the sitter out. So we are really having 3 days of internal body temperature, which is measured every 15 minutes when those heifers are out of the pasture, they are not disturbed, they do not have any human interaction. And we also look and we continuously monitor the environmental conditions on the pastures where those animals are kept. So we measure the temperature, the humidity, we compute the temperature humidity index, which is an indicator of the environmental stress. And so I wanted to show you the response of the different breeds that we have to this environmental stress. This is a, you know, pretty typical Florida summer day. So you have it from midnight to the next midnight. And I use the livestock hazard guide, which looks at the THI, the temperature humidity index. And these are the thresholds that they use. So anything, a THI lower than 75, it's considered minimal heat stress. That's the light blue. And then it goes all the way to greater, a THI greater than 84 would be considered critical heat stress, okay? So you can see that throughout the day, you have pretty much from, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning to maybe 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon, those animals are exposed to either major or critical heat stress, okay? So when we look at their body temperature and how they react or they respond to this environmental heat stress, I started with only two of the breed groups that we have. and I put a purebred Brahman and a purebred Angus, and I'm sure you don't have any problem telling which is which, right? But it is very interesting to notice that the Brahman, which are the orange ones, they are really able to maintain their body temperature much lower throughout the day. And if you notice, it's actually right under 39 degrees Celsius, which is that limit when we know that above 39 degrees, we start seeing some negative effects, especially related to reproduction. So they are able to stay right under that, while the Angus starts peaking really early during the day. So major differences in terms of how they respond to the temperature. We can look at how the other breed groups are responding, and you know the yellow one is the one which is 75% Brahman. That's really the only one which is able to stay a little bit closer to the purebred Brahman. Everybody else is going to be pretty much in between the purebred Angus and the purebred Brahman. The problem is that when we look at this type of data, it's kind of hard to work with this. With these graphs, right? I have 3 days, they have different THIs throughout the day, I have different body temperatures, so what we are actually using for our analysis is what we call the phenotypic plasticity. So I'm going to explain this briefly to you how it works, but it's really the ability of an individual to alter the phenotype in response to an environmental condition. In our case, I'm really interested at the ability of one genotype to produce more than one phenotype when it's exposed to different environments. So, for example, if I have here a graph where I have 3 different genotypes, and this would be the case of no plasticity, right? If I look at each one of those genotypes, I see exactly the same phenotype across a gradient of that particular environment. So as the environment is changing, I do not see a change in the phenotype of each one of those 3 genotypes. So there's no plasticity. In this case, you can see that as I move along the environmental gradient, each genotype will express a different phenotype. Okay, so this is what we call, although I'm still looking at exactly, so the red line is one single genotype, the phenotype that I'm observing is going to be different depending what environment I'm looking at. Okay, so that's how we define plasticity. And then you have, going really fast. And then I have the most extreme case of plasticity where not only each genotype is changing, but I also have a severe or a strong genotype-environment interaction. So we're trying to model the change across the environmental conditions using this plasticity, this phenotypic plasticity model. And really how we do it in our case, we are taking that plot which I showed you before with the THI. So this is the THI throughout the day. And I really need 3 points, okay? So I'm going to define a low THI. In our case, we said a low THI is between 74 and 76, an average THI, and then the high THI, 84 and 86. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to take each individual and only consider the body temperature when that cow was under either a low THI, a high THI, or a mean THI. That's going to allow me to calculate or to compute that phenotypic plasticity, which is actually just a reaction norm. So the statistical model is a linear reaction norm that we can use. And we get a much nicer, we see the same data, okay? So the data or the conclusion doesn't change. It's just statistically it's a lot easier to use this data because now all I have for each individual, I have an intercept, which is really the body temperature under the low THI, and then I have a slope, which tells me how much this individual is changing as I move from a low THI to a high THI. So, again, the conclusion is the same. You can see these are, again, just the Angus and the Brahman. In terms of the temperature at a low THI, they're pretty similar, okay? But what the biggest difference is in their slope, where you have a much higher, much bigger increase in their temperature in Andes compared to the ground. And I'm going to hopefully jump over those. Okay. The other thing I wanted to show, because, you know, I think this is actually very important. I started to show you how the difference between the Brahman and the Angus at, during a typical day, but then there's also a difference. So we can look at different days in terms of their heat load. So I can, and what you have here, you have two different days. One of them is a low heat load, and one of them is a high heat load. Can you tell me which is the low heat load day? Okay, so everybody's asleep. So one is a low heat load, okay, and one is a high heat load. Which one has a... Okay, I'm going to switch the question on you now. Which one is the high heat load? Yes, the right one. And there are a number of things that you can see right away. First of all, during this day, which is our, that is our low THI load or heat load, during the night, you actually have a much lower THI, so the animals, they get a chance to actually bring their body temperature lower, and then even throughout the day, they do not get to that critical heat stress. And there's also a little bit, so even if they are under major heat stress, but they do get some more breaks in that THI. And then there's the high THI low. I think it's very interesting to see the difference in, and I'm only going to show you the Brahman and the Angus and how they respond in these two different days. And if I plot them there, this is actually pretty much what I showed you before in a low THI low day, the Brahman are going to be able to stay lower. The Angus is going to go pretty high. The Angus is going to go pretty high for a high THI low, but I think you can see that if the heat stress is really high, even the Brahman are going to have problems. Okay, so their temperature is also going to start going high if the THI load or the heat stress during that time is going to be high. So I think this is important, especially as we think forward and we say, well, the climate is changing, it's going to get hotter. You know, if even the Brahman, they have problems under those conditions, we need to start thinking about it more seriously. So we are looking at that as well. I'm going to go back to those two different pathways that I showed you at the beginning of my talk, okay? So I said what I would like to be able to do is select cattle that are able to regulate their body temperature by maximizing the heat exchange. So there are a number of factors there which are important. And the three that we looked at involve the coat, the hair, and we'll talk a little bit about that, the sweat glands, and then other skin properties. And very briefly, I'll show you how we look at each one of them and what's the impact of each one of those factors on thermal tolerance. So for the coat, what we do, we take a number of measures. First of all, just a visual appraisal, which is the coat score. We range that 1 to 5. We do take a sample of the hair, and then we take a picture. We use a fancy software, but what we basically do, we measure the length and the diameter of the short hair and the long hair. And we actually measure 10 of each, and then we get an average. But that will give me the length and the diameter of the top coat and the undercoat. And I'm going to show you this on the multi-breed population again, and I don't think it's going to surprise anybody if we look at both of them, the long hair length and the short hair length. There is a significant effect, right, as you move from 100% Angus, which has the longer top coat, the longer undercoat, all the way to the Brahman, which are going to have, they're going to be the animals with the shortest one. But what I wanted to actually show you, which I think is even more important than this, is this type of plot where I'm showing you the individual data for each one of the six groups. And of course, you can see the trend from the longest in the Angus to the shortest in the Brahman. But what I want you to take from these two top pictures is really the amount of variation. Within each breed group, you have a really large amount of variation, which means, you know, all the time as breeders, we say, if you have variation, that's a good sign, right? It means that we can select for those things. The sweat glands are even more interesting to us. So we, what we do, we take a skin biopsy. We actually take two. One, we use it for the skin histology. Another one, we use it for some RNA work. And on the skin histology, there are a number of things we can measure, but the first one is really the sweat glands. So these white vesicles, these are the sweat glands. And again, I put only a Brahman and an Angus there, and I'm sure, again, you have no troubles telling me which is which, right? Tremendous differences in... Tremendous differences in the size of those sweat glands, much bigger in Brahman. They are also, we find that numerically they are, we do have more, but just the size is a tremendous difference between the Angus and the Brahman. And then if we look at the data, pretty much the same way, we do have a linear effect with a smaller sweat glands in Angus to bigger sweat glands in Brahman. But again, still a good level of variation within each group. And there are other skin properties that we try to measure. One which is actually quite significant is the distance from the sweat gland to the top, to the outside of the skin. But there are a number of other skin properties that we are looking at. All of this is encouraging. All of this is saying, you know, there are enough differences in all of these, the hair properties, the sweat glands, all the other skin properties that would allow us to select for animals that have a higher or better ability to exchange, get rid of that internal heat that they are producing, and maybe not altering the production side of things. And I'm going to end up just, I'm going to leave you with the other population that we use. This, we actually call it our training population because it is much larger. It is a population of just Brahmis heifers. We are working with the Seminole Tribe of Florida. They are one of the biggest commercial Brahmis producers in the state, about 10,000 head of cattle. But every year for the last 3 years, we measured about 800 of their replacement heifers. We're actually getting ready to do it again this year. And on these animals, we measure the same thing, the vaginal temperature and the THI in the pasture. But we also measure a number of different things. We are measuring directly the sweating rate. We look at the coat, just like I showed you on the multi-breed population. We record the temperature, the temperament, the shoot and the exit score, body condition score. We've got the skin biopsies. We do get a weight measurement in the summer when we actually collect all the thermotolerance data, and then later in December. So we do get we calculate a weight gain over the summer and fall just to try to correlate their body temperature in the summer with production later on. And as I said, because they are the replacement heifers, we are going to have available the subsequent pregnancy status. All of them, they go through a timed AI late in the fall, so we get to look at all of those. But we hope that this is the population, and we do have 250K genotypes on all of these animals. This is a training population that would really allow us to, you know, tease apart the production versus the ability to lose heat So we can select for both of them. We just started looking at some of the genomics underlying these traits. So the first step is just run a genome-wide association study for each individual trait that we have. Pretty good signals actually on all of them. You can see some of the heritability estimates actually not bad at all for either temperature under low THI, temperature under high THI, hair length, sweat gland size. So all of it looks promising in terms of us having the ability with these populations that we created to try to identify, you know, what are the genomic regions that are maybe controlling these traits. And the idea would be at the end to find regions that maybe, and I only have here the hair and the sweat glands and the skin, but in the future, if we add the production traits on top of this, we are going to look for genomic regions that are important, let's say, for example, for sweat glands, but they are not affecting the pregnancy rate or they are not affecting the weight gain. And so in terms of future work, we are going to try to get those gene networks for from all these populations that these are the ones that are going to allow us to distinguish between genomic regions which are affecting production from genomic regions which are important for thermoregulation. As I said, we do have a skin biopsy that we took for some gene expression work. We haven't started looking at that yet, but we will add that hopefully in the next few years. By the way, we do have, if there are any students looking for a good PhD program, we do have some positions available. There's a lot of data to work with, so if you're interested in coming to Florida, please talk to me after this talk. And so I'm going to leave you with a few conclusions. First of all, I think, you know, the Brahman can help to a certain extent, as I showed you, right? Try to bring a little bit of that adaptability, thermotolerance in our population. But what we find is that there is quite a bit of variation when it comes to this phenotypic plasticity. So not all the Brahmin, they are not all the same, right? So they do respond differently to that heat stress. The problem is, how do I identify the ones which are resistant to that, and they are adaptive, and they can, you know, still produce without having that negative effect of heat stress. The good news from the first look when we what we did in terms of genetics, you know, pretty good heritability measures. Meaning that if we do design the tools, if we do collect the data, we should be able to select for this type of traits. But we do, as I said, we do need to look, you know, take a multi-omics approach, call it whichever way you want to call it. We can't really focus on only one trait. So we need to look at different things. We need to make sure that if we are going to select for try to increase the thermotolerance, we are really not hurting the production performance. So that's where we are. And, you know, that's really the goal, increase tolerance to heat stress, but still allow for that increased efficiency of production. And with that, a lot of people to thank, a lot of work that goes into collecting these phenotypes that I showed you. Also funding from USDA and Florida Cattlemen Associations and other agencies. So very grateful for that. I'll open it up for questions. Yes?
Within the Angus population, did you find individuals that had the heat tolerance, say, similar to an average problem?
That's a good question. If they overlap. I would need to go back and look at the individual data and see if we have that. I just know we have quite a bit of variation. I'm not really sure that they would be, you know, we are able to find them. I don't know. But that's a great question. I'm going to look that up. Yes.
If bigger the skin biopsies, and which traits do you think could become maybe seed stock selection traits? Like the hair length seems to be maybe more easy to do than the skin biopsy.
Absolutely.
The temperature markers maybe.
Yes.
Yeah,
can you repeat
the question?
Oh, I'm sorry. So the question was about the skin biopsy, how big they are, how easy they are to take, what would be a better trait that maybe could become something that everybody can measure to include in an evaluation. The skin biopsies, they are not that difficult to take. They are 6 millimeters, so they are very small, but it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of money to actually do all the histology work on them. So I do not see that. It is great for research purposes, but I do not see that as a trait which can be collected easily in the future. Compared to the hair, which, yes, you can. And, you know, we can do it even the coat score, which is just the visual appraisal of the length and the thickness of the hair. Even that is a good indicator. So even when we only look at the coat score, we do get a significant difference. The hair length, it will give me, you know, a little bit more precision, so I have a more detailed phenotype. But even that one, I mean, I do not see any producer pulling hair and measuring, you know, how long or how thick it is. I think that's where if we can develop, and, you know, these tools would need to be population, pretty much population specific. So, for example, for this group that we are working with, you know, we could develop now tools because we have the phenotypes, so we can develop those genomic tools that they could use.
Do you have genetic correlations for these thermotolerance phenotypes?
Yes, we do. I won't be able to tell you, so don't ask me of anyone, but yes, that's what we are doing. So we are computing the genetic correlations based on the markers between all of those traits, yes.
And are they pretty correlated?
They are, so if you look at all the hair measures, yes, they are highly correlated. We actually have a paper coming out pretty soon about those correlations for the hair properties. For the skin properties, again, we find that some of them are correlated. The sweat glands in the hair, they are not. So there's not a genetic correlation between the sweat gland size and the length of the hair. But yes, we are looking, those are important.
Have you done any, have you looked into any correlations or seen any initial correlations between these thermoregulation traits and reproductive traits?
Yeah, that's a great question. So correlations between any of the thermotolerance traits and the reproduction, yes. So, you know, that was the first thing we did. So whenever we had, and we did it only on the first year where we have a complete data set where we have, you know, we score the heifers if they got pregnant from the first AI, then if they got pregnant by, because if they did not get pregnant following the timed AI, they got put with a natural bull. And then we also had some that were open at the end of the breeding season. And yes, there is a correlation there between the temperature that they exhibit over the summer and their pregnancy status in the following breeding season.
How did you account for difference in total body surface area?
If we accounted for differences in body, no, we did not account for differences in body size. And some of them are quite different now. They are all two-year-old heifers. So in terms of age, they are comparable ages. I mean, it's the same age, but they are going to vary a little bit in size. We did not account for that, although we do have the weight. So the only thing we can put in the model, we can account for weight, but not a surface. That's not an easy thing to measure, yes.
Do you suspect there may be just differences in two breeds based on metabolic rate, and if they were similar levels of intake based upon body weight, the Brahman animal would have more people available for productive functions. Could that have a difference in maybe one of the power functions expand their differences?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's something that we know. We know that part of the thermotolerance that Brahma animals have, it comes from a lower metabolic rate. And that's why, as I said, our goal is to try to look, you know, have all the different production measures that we can take on those animals, because our goal is not to select for the individual, you know, which is best adapted, but it's doing that by not eating, by having a lower metabolic rate, which means a decreased productivity. So, absolutely. But yeah, some of the differences in terms, if you look at just purebred Angus versus purebred Brahman, is coming from that lower metabolic rate, but not all of it. So that's why we are looking, you know, sweating. Well, if I can select for an individual that can sweat more, I can still push that production a little bit higher.
How about coat color when it's 75% versus
25%? Yes, coat color. So we do have the coat color in our data, and it is significant, but not that much. But that's just because of numbers. Because most of them, especially when we look when we have the training population, which is the Brangus population. We really do not have a big difference. We don't have enough numbers for the other colors. You know, they are mostly black. So we are losing power to look at what's the impact of a coat color. Now, on the multi-breed, we can't really look at color because that's confounded. All the Brahman are going to be, if we just pick the extremes, all the Brahman are going to be white or gray, and then you have the Angus, which are black. We do have in the Brangus, we do have some variation in terms of color. So we have some red, we have some brindle, we have some other colors, but unfortunately those are not enough in numbers to really allow us to look at the effect of the coat color on those traits. So we would need more numbers for the color.
Can you go back to your slide that showed the temperatures of the cattle throughout the day? Of the Angus and the Brahman.
Just the one day or the two different days?
The one day.
Sorry.
And that's fine, that either one of those. So the Brahman, I mean, it looks, there was some, maybe it was in the two-day slide, where the Angus actually went lower during the cooler part of the day.
Yes, and we find that, so, it which was actually very interesting to us, but we see that over and over, where actually the Brahman, they do not go that farther down during the night. So the Brahman, they kind of stay constant, and you cannot see it on this graph, you're right, it was probably on the other one. But all the other breed groups would go much lower during the night, which we thought that would be a good thing because they would have a lot of buffering capacity the next day. But it seems that there is actually more, a bigger advantage in having a constant temperature no matter what the environment is, instead of having those big fluctuations where I think they lose more energy trying to, you know, bring the temperature down that much at night and then go up. So we find that that is a very interesting observation. Yes, absolutely. One more question.
So on the graph there, is THI, is that different or the same as
THI is on this side of the graph. There's the temperature humidity index. And that's just for the blue bars, which show the THI every hour of the day. So this hour from 2 to 3, that's a THI greater than 84, which is a critical.
The THI is different from what we call the
Yes, it's the temperature humidity index. I don't know what the temperature, the heat index is.
Did you have the calculation in it?
Yeah, the equation converts to Celsius, so it's different. Okay, very good.
Any more questions? Let's think.